Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Now on Triple M Footy.
Too strong, too good.
This is the Midweek Rub.
That is just brilliant.
How do you like those apples?
Triple M rocks footy.
Yes, hello and welcome to another edition of Triple M Footy's Midweek Rub. Can you believe it? Round 22 coming up this weekend already. But the boys are here, they're all in good form, they're all looking sharp, and they're all up and about as I look to my left and welcome Daisy Thomas. Good afternoon, Daisy.
Good afternoon, Joey. Great to be here again. Plenty happening in the world of footy, which is exciting, and getting to the pointy end of the season, which we love.
Damo, welcome to you. As always, plenty happening.
We haven't got time for welcomes, Joey.
Straight into it.
Straight into it. Oh. We often like a little bit of banter off the top, don't we?
Oh, but is this serious
not
today?
No.
Well, I bring
hello,
too much.
The man you're about to introduce has been on the phone all morning. I've hardly had a word into him. He wants to get a few things off his chest, I think.
For whatever reason,
I don't even have to bring you guys current material. I can bring you material from 20 years ago that actually is big news.
Let's treat it seriously because you were the focus of an event, the 1996 North Melbourne Premiership Reunion.
Great held couple of days.
At Yarraville Pub on Saturday. Reported on Monday that you had an altercation.
One of the what's his name? Who broke the story?
It was Sam Edmund.
The first story said came to blows. Now, that's factually incorrect, so there were no blows. There was a firm conversation. Altercation, I think, is even too firm to say that that occurred. Firm conversation. What he left out of the story, I think everyone knows that Steve-O and I aren't best mates. That's not a puzzle. So why this keeps coming up, I don't know. What he did leave out was that at the end of the night or the evening or late afternoon, whatever it was, Steve-O and I actually had a couple of beers together and left together. So we were standing out the front, both waiting for our respective Ubers to leave the particular venue. So he left that out. So it sounds like we've had this massive blow up and an altercation and, as he said, come to blows, which clearly was factually incorrect. So we leave together. So he leaves that out. He also leaves out the fact that, now, I don't know whether Steve-O was upset the next day or not, and that's why he didn't come to the motorcade. What I do know that Steve-O...
And the motorcade being that the pre-North Melbourne Adelaide match where the players from the 96 game was celebrated at Marvel Stadium.
Correct. And what I do...
And you attended that.
Yes. And what I do know about that, my understanding, and I've spoken to Arch and I've spoken to Kingy and I've spoken to heaps of other players that are close with Steve-O as well as... some of those players I'm close with, and Steve-O wasn't well. He'd had a reasonable night, be fair to say. We all had a reasonable day. Steve-O may be bigger than others, so he didn't attend the Sunday. The other thing that if there was a big issue and this big thing that it had happened and it had upset all of these ex, you know, teammates of mine and everyone else, on the Sunday, I sat there with Darren Crocker, I sat there with Danielle Laidley, sat there with Glenn Archer, sat there with Sholey, all mutual. Some of them really mutual friends of both of ours. If I'd upset the apple cart or they were really disappointed with what had occurred on that day, then that next day would not be happening. So it's been blown into something that it absolutely wasn't. And that's disappointing. And what it's not disappointing for me. This is what really hurts every single time. So when Dills like Sam over-exaggerate something that's happened, who it affects, what he doesn't realise is it affects Steve-O's daughters. It affects my daughters and not my son because he's only young, but it affects then family members and everyone else. That's what these types of things do. Who cares if Steve-O and I had a firm conversation together? How is that an actual story?
Are you able to clear up what it was?
What
you
is
did,
an actual
what
story?
You did say now that it has been made public? I mean, and if it doesn't benefit what you're alluding to?
No. Well, I wanted to have a conversation about Steve-O I was worried about him, and I said I'm worried about you, and he said, well, he obviously took a little bit of umbrage to me saying I was worried about him. He probably thought maybe the word
you contributed.
Maybe the word. Well, of course. Yeah. But I said I'm worried about, you know, I want him to look after himself just like people want me to look after myself. Now, he took a little bit of umbrage to that. But to say that it was a massive altercation or came to blows and then we left there and everyone was upset with everyone and it was a big thing is totally incorrect. So that's the disappointing part about it. So it's not a story. It wasn't a story. And it still isn't a story. And I hope I've just cleared up that once again, this has been blown into something that it absolutely wasn't.
Is it fair that players can have a private matter that could stay private, or do you think it's fair, the reporting on that story?
Well, again, I hadn't heard. I mean, it's fair to say we'd spoken, didn't we, after the story was reported. So, as always, Joey, there's versions of events flying around, and the truth's somewhere in the middle. We've now got Duck's version, and I'm comfortable with what Duck has said there, absolutely. I mean, we know the history of the situation. We know that it is always going to be talked about. Duck's
I'm not
version.
Sure why it
yeah.
should always be talked about.
I get what you're saying, Duck.
It doesn't make sense.
No. But there was a reunion, and obviously something happened. And look, some people argue, and Sam, I'm not here to defend Sam. As I've said, he's a very good journalist, Duck. You've said that what he reported.
Well, he's let himself down.
Well,
on
that
this.
And that's your version of that, and that's fair enough for you too.
You know what, Sam? You know what, Sam? We all have bad days. You've had a shocker.
We'll leave it at that. We'll take our first break because, Damo, there's plenty of other news, stories coming up to chat about after this. We'll do the Daisy Duck Dive, and we'll also take a look at all the Round 22 action because there is plenty on the line for a lot of teams in regards to making finals and finishing top four. That's all still to come on Triple M Footy's Midweek Rub.
This is the Midweek Rub.
Did I break that or did someone else? No, someone else.
Triple M rocks footy.
Welcome back to Triple M Footy's Midweek Rub. And now that we've got that off our chest, we can get into Damo, some of the footy news happening around the industry this week. Real stories.
The Blues, obviously, given their 4-6 scoreline from the past 10 matches days, and obviously, and as we speak, there's no confirmation whether they'll appeal the tribunal finding last night, which confirmed the match review office decision on Paddy Cripps's hit on Callum Archie being worthy of 2 weeks. Out for the game against Melbourne, out for the game against Collingwood as we speak. Either way, they've got to win one of those two games to be assured of a finals berth, and it's gone haywire.
It certainly has. It's really disappointing in the sense of how it's happening. And yes, there are excuses and reasons. I'm a big one for that. Some of the reasons being personnel and injuries coming at the wrong time. But I crunched some of the numbers just on their forms round 1 to 10 and where they were in the big key stats. So contested ball, they're still really strong, still ranked second. But then it starts to fall away. Clearances were ranked second, now 8th. Centre clearances were number 1. So think of the personnel they've had in there and the changes now that will come. They're currently ranked 14th in that situation. You go to inside 50s, were 5th, now 12th.
Scores are down about 3 goals between rounds 1 to 10 and beyond.
Well, that's it. Goals per inside 50. So that talks more to your ball movement and how you're getting it in. Are you getting it in before defences can fold back? They were 6th, now 18th. Worst in the comp for goals per inside 50. And points gone from 93.2, which was 5th, to 77, which is 14th. So there are concerns. That's the centre of the ground. That's forward of centre. And obviously giving up big scores at the other end. So it has really turned half glass full. They are still capable of winning one of these last two games. That is the upside, and then you can sort things out and try and rectify a few of these issues going into finals, but it's going to be bloody hard without Paddy Cripps.
Can they get on a run? You're right. So Cripps is going to be out. Can they get on a run, Joey, and do what, say, the Bulldogs did in 16? Do they have that sort of talent and that capability?
I think they do. Why not? Yeah. I mean, it's going to be tough for them to make the finals, but then if they get Cripps comes back and Kennedy will be back. We're not sure about Georgie Hewett.
We're hearing bad things about Georgie Hewett, Joey.
He's been a big cog that's been out.
He has. Yeah. He's been an important cog.
Highly unlikely to return this year.
But they get their personnel back behind the ball. Pitnet, the interesting discussion, Pitnet to Koning, we had that a couple of weeks ago. They've still got the same forward line that's there. They could turn it around. They can. I mean, the numbers you spoke about, Dave, you've got to remember, that was a really high benchmark the first 10 weeks. I mean, that was a hard level to stay at. For how well they were playing, they've come back down to earth. I agree. I think a little bit the ladder positions played a little bit. I think they've gone conservative with the way they've moved the ball. All of a sudden, Damo, you go from having a new coach and just playing duck carefree footy. Yep. Then all of a sudden, we're sitting fourth.
Weight of expectation.
There is, and all of a sudden you play not to lose rather than playing to win. And Fremantle went through it as well. So I think they can find if they just release the shackles a little bit and play a bit more on instinct and try and go out and win a game rather than just trying to not lose.
Well, I think they have to. You just look at Collingwood and see what they're doing.
Exactly right.
That's exactly what they've got to look at and just say, let's just play like that. Let's just take the game on, get our contested stuff right, and then just go for it.
Would love to see them review that game on the weekend of the half a quarter that they played really well and were dominant and go, look, why can't we do this? Why don't we play with that expansive ball movement and take them on? Obviously, what you're doing and when you play safe, you almost die a slow death. Give sides a chance to fold back those numbers I speak of. That's because oppositions are getting back in front of you. Harry McKay, who's out of form. Charlie Kerno not having the impact. get it in long and strong to these boys. You can see what they do in those first 10 rounds. So I think they can turn it around. I'm still half full, although alert but not alarmed just yet.
I'm still with you. And even if they don't make finals, Damo, for me, I still think this has been a huge successful year for them.
See, I don't subscribe to that.
Yeah, absolutely. From where we were thinking about them at the start, I think this is a huge stepping stone for their future. We really...
Joey, at 8-2, I reset, and I had higher expectations from that
point. You've got to take the bigger picture into it for the whole season. Mm. I think this is a huge stepping stone for their next 3 or 4 years when really is their chance to contend for a flag.
I hear what you're saying there. I think it'd be a massively lost opportunity.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Damo. From 8-2, at the start of the season, I think most of us had it probably 6th to 12th, and that was a fair enough spot to have them. If you start 8-2, the expectation shouldn't be that if we miss finals, it's a successful year.
Mm.
The expectation then should shift to if we miss finals, we've let ourselves down.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Bigger picture, I think that this will hold them in good stead no matter what. Well, of course, they want to play a final and even win a final or two, but I think that this is a great stepping foundation for them to build to a premiership team over the next 3 to 5 years. Hey, we spoke about one Josh Kennedy last week retiring, the great West Coast Eagle now. Another great Josh Kennedy is stepping away.
Yeah, similar storylines, weren't they? Yeah, similar time in the game. Obviously, their damage and impact at AFL was done at a second footy club. Obviously, for the Swans version, having started at Hawthorn, where his famous name was already entrenched at the club. And to think he's been able to do what he's done, win a premiership at the Sydney Swans against Hawthorn, obviously, in the way that one unfolded. And to here we are, 2022. Now, he's retired at the end of the year. He's got that little 1% hope that his hamstring will get him back. It's not going to happen, though, is it? So the fairy tale is not going to be there. But as he said yesterday, Duck, it doesn't matter. His career is already encapsulated with brilliance.
He's been a super player, and we've mentioned it a few times. Great finals player, 2016. He was easily the Swans' best player. BOG at halftime, just been a workhorse.
3 goals in that losing grand final, and nearly won it for them.
Yep, unbelievable career.
Yeah,
and one that you can't believe. You think about sliding doors, the fact that Hawthorn let him go to Sydney, and then the career he's had, incredible.
Couldn't get a game regularly anyway, but in seasons 2007, 8 and 9, his first and only 3 years at Hawthorn, and obviously they won a flag in 08. You guys would have come across him in those early days, would have come across him as a Swan.
He was impossible to stop at the peak of his powers as a midfielder. He was, I think, one of the first real big-bodied mids that we now lord with Cripps and Petrarca and Fife and all these big-bodied mids. He was the first one of them that we almost go, he was impossible to stop at a stoppage.
He had ridiculous strength.
The strength, you could tackle him. I could have hung off him and basically piggybacked him and he still would have got the handball out.
Oh, yeah, I remember playing centre bounces against him and trying to figure out, do you take the side and run into him and I'd bounce off him, or I'd take the back and he'd just hold me there, I'd take the front and he'd put me out to the wing. So he was... Phenomenal player. And that final stuff you speak of, he's someone, as a Sydney fan, you would have loved to have gone and watched. But just as a footy fan, you knew what you were going to get every time you flicked on a final series. And he was playing hard, tough, encapsulated what the Swans and Bloods culture was.
3 BNFs, 3 All-Australians, 4 times best finals player for the Sydney Swans. I remember a stage at St Kilda, we actually double-teamed at stoppages. We wedged him. We basically had one player either side of him to try and limit his influence at stoppage. He's been one of the all-time great Swans.
And 3 times in the top 6 or 7 of the Brownlow count too, and started favourite or thereabouts on a few occasions. Who's going to win that this year now that Cripps has had his form taper off a little bit and obviously officially, as we speak, suspended, therefore can't win? There's still 5 biggish names or big names in that bookmakers charts. Days, Joey, Duck, obviously led by Lockie Neal, who's, I think, very clear-cut favourite now to go second, Brownlow. The 2 Melbourne midfielders are Oliver and Petrarca.
Do they take votes off one another? We know that they probably will.
And Tuke Miller.
Neal, Brayshaw. They're all the names. All the names we've been talking about all year. I still think they're the ones that are going to be up the top of the tree.
Yeah. Who's the smoky, boys? Who's your smoky?
I think at the minute, I think it's still between the two. So Neil and Brayshaw, I think they'll sort of be your alligator blood catalyst
Oliver?
Sort of duel down the straight.
In the guineas.
I think Oliver will be competitive, but I think Petrarca will take votes off them, and then their form has waned throughout the back half of the year. A smoky, I really like Jeremy Cameron. I think that he's played enough footy, he's kicked enough goals in his side that's won enough games. He might be doing it the harder way in 2s, 1s, the odd 3 every now and again, but I think he's a real smoky.
And Andy Brayshaw for me is still the one. When you think about Fremantle, they've won 13 and a half games. Who else is going to take votes? He could do an Ollie Wines and basically poll 3s in every game they win. Yep. Because they look at the stat sheet, pretty even, and then Andy Brayshaw had his 30. Yep. Or he might get missed by the umpires because he hasn't been a pole getter. So he's the watch for me, but you've got your smoke. Your boy, you're in love with him.
I am in love with Chad Warner. I've declared him a Brownlow medalist in the future. Why couldn't it be this year? Why couldn't he? If they are a wake-up to him early, Duck, with what he did early in the season. I mean, he played well in Buddy's 1,000th goal game back in round two, his first for the year. If they picked him up then, why couldn't he have six or seven BOGs to this point?
Because I'm just not sure. We know that a couple of players have done it in the past, but not too many in their breakout year. We don't know whether he's a poll getter for starters, do we?
Yeah, we don't. So, he's on the coaches' votes. He's in top 10. He's top 10 in the coaches' votes.
Yeah, I know.
The way he plays too would be taking the attention of the umpires. Also has the little rinse through the hair, which also helps. Yeah. But he is that burst away from stoppage, and we saw on the weekend, damaging in front of goal as well. So I think he'll certainly be voting.
Just having a quick look, polling. He could have 8 best on grounds, potentially. He could have 8. If he gets all the 3s in games, he could have 24 votes, 2 games to come.
If it's it could a low be coming like a charge. And, today, and mate, the coaches have noticed
it will be
too.
A low-scoring vote count. Yeah, it won't be the big highs of 30-plus like maybe last year.
I like the fact the coaches have discovered him, Duck. It's good.
Just lastly, how good's the game, by the way? How good of a state is the game in at the moment? We have got so many good games of footy, momentum swings, teams coming from behind, great scoring, key forwards back in vogue, Duck. It's been a tick to the AFL. For it's taken maybe a year or two to get these rule changes to show the real effects, but we're loving the footy we've seen this year. No one's talking about rolling balls anymore.
It always comes off the back of, though, a team that wins the premiership the year before and the way they go about it. So Melbourne, we know that the way they played, they're not playing the same way right at the minute. But so they move the ball, they get it in quickly, and you know you get numbers around the footy, front and square, et cetera, et cetera. And other teams have followed suit. I mean, Geelong are the greatest example in Collingwood, I think. I mean, Geelong have been a very, very good team for a very long time. But just that little tweak that they've made has made them now the premiership favourites. Collingwood have gone from nowhere to, you know, the top four just because they're now taking the game away and that not that stagnant, slow ball movement that we all absolutely hate. Not sure how that ever came in, to be honest with you. Well, Hawthorn used to have such good kicks. All left-footers used the ball so well so they could do that.
Yep.
And Geelong obviously had great control as well, but didn't stand up in finals. For that reason, I love it. I think the stand on the mark, although it can be awkward at times, I think that's made a huge difference.
Joe, you study the game, I think, in more depth than anyone I know and work with. When you see what's happened, the 6-6-6 is crucial. That rule isn't after stoppages. And I'm a big advocate for the stand rule. Now, I know it's had its detractors, but the fact that the player who's got the ball can take off the 45-degree angle kick because of this rule, I think that's equally crucial.
100%, Damo. Anyone that's still a detractor of the stand rule hasn't understood really the depths of it, how the game has opened up because of it. Now, kicking is becoming king again. Kicking and kicking forward and penetrating. You don't have to kick it long and blast away, but you're seeing all these teams go forward more because of the ability to do that. And the ball movement from one end to the other has improved significantly. The rates have gone up. It's made a big difference. And the 6-6-6 rule as well has just stopped teams flooding and getting numbers behind the ball, which has allowed teams to come back from behind and hit the front. So I think it's been excellent.
Absolutely. The overlap run too on the back of that stand rule, waiting for the man to get past so he can release the ball low and flat. You look at the round that was, 5 teams kicked over 100 points in the wins. 96, 96 and 95 were the next 3. The lowest score of the round in a winning team was Hawthorn with 70. That's bloody exciting. That's good for footy.
15, 16 years ago, we're having grand finals decided with points less than that.
It's
70.
It's a total, yeah.
As much as that in the pocket handball that you talk about that allows them to get past, I think you're spot on with that low, hard kick now that they can just...
That's the next one.
They're off the mark. The umpire doesn't call them back and they can just hit anything they want.
Yep. Game's in great shape and there's still a massive finals to come. Hey, we'll look ahead to that a bit later on. But up next, we're going to have a look at the Daisy Duck Dive Quick 5.
This is the Midweek Rub.
Duck, you're allowed to do whatever you want.
And does.
You've done your whole life.
Triple M rocks footy.
This is Triple M Footy's Midweek Rub, and it's now time for the Daisy Duck Dive.
On the Midweek Rub.
Absolutely outstanding by me.
I'm good from the waist down.
It's the Daisy Duck Dive.
Talking about those final couple of spots in the top 8, we spoke about Carlton in the previous break. It's down to Richmond, the Bulldogs, St Kilda, and the Blues. Daisy, which team will be the biggest disappointment if they miss out on the finals out of that quartet? Because you predicted the Western Bulldogs to miss the 8 at the start of the season, so credit to you, the Oracle. So are they still the biggest disappointment, or is there another team that's that'll disappoint the most?
There'll be a lot of noise about them being the biggest disappointment just from where they've come from, purely because they made a grand final last year. Arguably for me, it'll be the Blues, and not from the start of the season, purely because where they had themselves situated at the halfway point when they got to round 10. 8-2 to start the year, that is, at worst, you're making top eight. At best, you've got aspirations for top four, and you've set it up. You've done the hard work, and then you got a chance to reset, go again. We've spoken a little bit about why, but also they should have won a few more games than they have.
But what about St Kilda then? They were 8-3, and there was more expectation on them probably this season with regard to their window, where they're at, that they should be playing finals?
I'm pretty sure at the start of the year I didn't have them in either. Look, there was that bracket we spoke so much about in the early rounds, from spot 6 on the ladder to 12, and how congested that was going to be. It's played out, but I don't think St Kilda missing is a great shock to too many in the footy world.
Because of their starts, the Blues and St Kilda, well, that's disappointing from that point on. So they got off to great starts. But the Bulldogs, easily for me, they were one kick away from winning that grand final. They go one more in front, and we're talking about them as premiers, I reckon. And now we know what happened, and Melbourne smashed them. But that's why, where they sit right now, I think they're the biggest fall.
What about over in Port Adelaide? And Damo, get your opinion. A lot of talk on Ken Hinckley's future. Do you guys think that Port Adelaide should stick with Ken Hinckley for one more year and go to the well again with this group that have been pretty good for Ken? Yes, they've had disappointing this year. Or have you seen other teams like a Collingwood and Carlton and think a new first-year coach might give them a spike with this group that they've got to give them a crack?
It's such a complex situation, Joey, isn't it? I've had the view now for some weeks that I still feel we'll get to the end of the year and Ken and David Koch and others at Port will have the conversation and he won't be there. That's just my opinion on that. I don't know what to make of the public commentary by David Koch yesterday. I don't know whether it changes it dramatically or it's just part of the theatre, and there is a theatre attached. What I will say, though, is when you've got a good coach, to willingly choose to remove him, it's often the most dangerous thing a club can do, no matter where you think you are and no matter what you think that coach has done with his list. Recent example, North Melbourne, Brad Scott, 2019. Now, you can factor all that in. He might have taken them as far as they could have got, but the moment they removed him and brought others in, it just didn't work.
What about at Hawthorn? They removed the greatest coach of the modern era, and I think they'd be saying right now they're pretty comfortable with their decision.
They'd be very comfortable with that decision. And to your stronger point, Collingwood with Nathan Buckley too. But yeah, so look, I don't think Ken will be there next year.
I just think 1 year is a little bit of a slap in the face. I mean, if Ken's to do it, he probably wants, because let's be honest, if he puts his hand up and says, and they come to a mutual decision and he says leave, he gets a job for 3-4 years, doesn't he?
At another club. Probably.
He probably gets a 3 or 4 year deal. So it's whether he wants to back himself in, if they're prepared to give him one. I'd be giving him one. And
well, he's still got one to go. So just letting him play out.
Okay, so let that play out. Yeah. So you let that play out and you say, okay, I'm going to back myself in. And then if he does what I think this list can do, then all of a sudden then he gets the 3 years on top of that.
Hey, I'm big on that one as well. Let the year play out. I think he hasn't lost the group, and I think that's the biggest thing. When I look at coaches and when you're talking about how they're playing and how their team's playing, you can see if they still have the group from what the noise you hear externally, from how they present. When everyone speaks about Ken, it's with genuine love and affection, and they really want him to be there. They think he's the number one man, and that's not made up. That's not quasi or false or fluffy. And after their start, to go, what have they gone, 8-7?
Well, they've only gone 8-7 after the 0-5 start.
But that's not a bad turnaround considering you started 0-5. Yeah. So they've found something.
It's not compelling enough to say it's working.
But if they finish the year with a couple of wins or one more win, get it to 10-7, there's that little bit of a springboard we talk about, and they can turn around pretty
quickly. Big decision. What's your take? I think he deserves one more year, and I think he's a good enough coach that maybe he can do a bit of a Chris Scott and go, okay, how can we change up the way that we play to be a real threat again? I think he deserves that right. Let the year play out and then make the call, you know, as Duck said, either they extend him and he goes on and they're back up, or then they do look to get a new coach.
And he hasn't had a ruckman all year effectively, has he?
Really? And they've got Essendon and Adelaide to come, both very winnable games.
The talk today about Brody Grundy potentially going to Melbourne. What are your thoughts on that? Do Melbourne, for one, need Brody Grundy? Is that the right option if they do lose Luke Jackson?
Oh, I think if they lose Jackson, they just want that extra ruckman there.
But how do they split the time between Gorn and Grundy? What does that look like? Does that help Melbourne?
I think it'd be similar to what he and Jackson does, wouldn't it? Isn't that what they'd be trying to replicate?
Yeah.
That's what I would have thought.
Yeah, I'm confused by that one. Not for the fact that obviously like for like almost Jackson goes out, they're trying to replace it. But I think Jackson's got more tricks up forward than Brody Grundy does. We haven't really seen him.
He hasn't exactly taken a heap of marks and kicked goals.
Yeah, but in terms of he's only still in his infancy as a footballing career. So you go to Brody Grundy, we haven't seen that over a long period of time. So the upside to put him as a forward, you probably can prove the case that it's hasn't happened.
It's been 3 years, hasn't it, now? So the two COVID-affected years, Grundy, he had, quiet years.
Yes, he did. Yep.
And then this year.
Coming off to All Australians.
Correct. So it's been three. You're right. It's been 3 years since we've seen Brody's best. So there is some risk attached to it, clearly.
I'd be chasing a big forward. If you've got, what it's going to be, 700,000 to 800,000 to go and spend on someone, I'd be luring anyone you could who is a big key forward. That's what I think Melbourne need most. I don't need midfielders. Their back line's steady as ever when they're all out there.
Speaking of key forwards, last question, duck dive. Rory Lobb has been linked to the Western Bulldogs. We've spoken to them about their disappointing year. Is that going to actually help the Western Bulldogs, or do they need to have a big, deeper look at the way they play as a team, their defensive systems, and maybe because of what we spoke about earlier with the ball movement and the way teams have adjusted, they need to more look at the system of their team defence, or is it just personnel and bringing in Lobb and Jones will be the answer?
I'm a fan of Lobb. I think he makes any team better. When he's on, he can mark the footy, he can kick a goal, he can go into the ruck. So he makes anyone better for me.
As a Bulldogs fan, do you sit there and go, geez, he's a very good forward, he kicked 5 goals, or wow, our back line absolutely stinks, how easy was it? Like, it's a little bit of that. I'm not sure where I land on that one, probably in the case that I don't think he's the answer. I think they need a defender more than they need a key forward. They've got Shacky, who's playing reserves footy and kicking goals at the moment. Jamari Ugal-Hagen, that's had his best month of footy for a long time. And then also the astronaut up there. I'm not sure, and I know there's been talk that maybe you put Aaron Norton to centre-half back and trial him there, which, again, no real reason to do that unless you then go and chase another forward to push him out of his number one spot. Confuses me that, but obviously they've got more rhyme and reason to it than what I can come up with.
As can be the case too, Joey, when there's an absence of a player for some time, they become better than they were when they were last in the game. Mm. Liam Jones has become Alex Rance in the time away from the game, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. I'm stuck about those things. Yeah, you're right. He hasn't played for 12 months and he's 30.
Been playing
how old
up
will he be? 32.
He's been playing up at South.
How's McGovern been going?
McGovern's been all right. He's okay. He'll have a big role to play coming up for the finals.
I just remember, wasn't that all that long ago, we had Steve Silvani crossed into Langford coming back.
Hey, up next we'll have a look at the round 22 action, some big games coming up, and we'll see if we can start to predict what the top 8 will look like. That's all still to come on Triple M Footy's Midweek Rub.
This is the Midweek Rub.
Do you owe an apology?
Not an apology.
Triple M rocks footy.
This is Triple M Footy's Midweek Rub. We're going to keep rolling because Duck's keen to get out of here and get to dinner. Hey, let's... Well, we're on radio, so I say...
Don't start that. I'll be doing something. Say that.
We'll go lunch first, then kicks in the dinner. Hey, before we have a look at the round 22 games, we just always like to hold ourselves accountable. Melbourne Collingwood was always a tough one for us to tip. Let's just take a listen back to how we tip these games. Melbourne v Collingwood. Oh, can the Pies keep doing it, Duck?
The bubble to burst
this week.
Yep.
Has to burst at some stage, I think.
Well, you'd have to. You can't keep winning games by less than a kick.
Oh, yes, you can. The bubble still ain't burst.
Unfortunately for Pies fans, I think it'll be a good game, but I will be tipping the D's, although I could see the Pies winning, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's a draw. Was that enough pause in between, Jill, so you can cut that up? Good stuff.
And I keep copping criticism for underestimating Collingwood and not tipping them, so I think the Pies will win.
Oh, do you?
Do you actually, or is that just you trying to please the people?
I think the Pies will win. There you
good
go.
Call, Joey. Well done, Joey. Well done, Joey and Daisy. Out of the four of us.
The bubble ain't burst just yet. It's still rolling.
Sort of. Each way all up for the first four.
Okay, let's get into this week's games. A lot to play for, particularly for St Kilda. They need to win one of their last two games to make finals. They've got Brisbane at Marvel Stadium Friday night. Can anyone see them upsetting Brisbane?
Apparently St Kilda have put that to the AFL. They want that move to MCG.
Very clever, Dale. No, I can't. I think Brisbane will be winning.
Yeah, I can't tip St Kilda.
No.
Unfortunately, I can't either. Brisbane, they're looking pretty sharp now. Zach Bailey back in a bit of form. Daisy, your boy. He might be the one, the X factor come finals time. What about the Melbourne-Carlton game? Saturday night, this is massive. We've spoken earlier about the Blues needing to win a game as well to guarantee themselves finals. Can anyone see them beating Melbourne without Cripps, Kennedy and Hewitt?
No.
For that reason, the midfield has just been smashed and there's no obvious replacement.
Oracle?
Also no.
Oh. thought you were going to give the Blues a chance.
I give them a chance. I just hope they come out and play with some real freedom. We've seen that you can expose Melbourne a little bit in that manner if you take them on by ball, but I think they'll get beat up in the midfield. I know you're big on that as well. So it'd be too hard, too much ball going into the Melbourne forward line, which means you have to transition at the full length of the ground, which is hard to do at any ground, let alone the MCG against the D's.
Couldn't have said it any better myself. The last one, we'll take a look at Sydney Collingwood at the SCG on Sunday. This is
sellout.
Massive.
It's an old-fashioned sellout, this one.
Yeah, it's a beauty. Sydney at home.
Ooh, bubble burst, you reckon?
Yep. Bubble going to burst this week? They can't win again by under 10 points,
like
can they?
Said, Collingwood supporters are loving what I'm tipping.
Yeah, that's right.
So bubble to burst this week.
Joey, in a week where I finally came around to realising Collingwood is a premiership hope, I'm still going to tip against them. Swans.
You've been on the Swans all year, so stick with them.
I've got to stick with him.
I went against the Pies last week and the feedback was very strong, so I'm back on board. Go the Pies.
I'm with you. Yeah. I underestimated them for about the first 16 rounds. Now I'm just going to keep tipping them until the bubble does burst. I think Collingwood will win this one by under 10 points again.
Again.
You watch this wave continue. And then lastly, just quickly touch on Essendon and Port Adelaide. You spoke earlier, Daisy, about Port Adelaide. Bombers, they are disappointing against the Giants, but they've had a really good 6 or 8 weeks. Anyone see this one? Anyone got interest?
No.
Ducks, nah, Ducks no keen interested. To get out of here.
Well, they're not playing finals.
No, they're not. The Bombers will win that one, I think. Yeah. Hey, good show. You, thank you, Duck. Well done you, to Duck. You, mate. Get out of here, go and enjoy it, relax, have a beer. This has been Triple M Footy's Midweek Rub, exclusive to the Listener app. And, of course, you can listen to every game this weekend live on Triple M and the Listener app, starting with Friday night's clash between St Kilda and Brisbane. With the Friday huddle, Darce, Howie, Brownie, Damo and Chief are all going to be there. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll do it all again next Wednesday.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks footy.